We learn from a pasuk regarding Moshe Rabbeinu that Shloshim Yom Kodem HaChag, Sholim V'Dorshim B'Hilchos HaPesach, that 30 days before a Chag you have to start talking about the halachas of the Yontif. And what it means in a practical, in a literal sense, it's not just that you're supposed to start learning about Pesach. What it really means is that normally, if a Rebbe is teaching his Talmidim, they're not really supposed to ask a question that's not pertaining to what they're learning right now. So let's say we were learning in Shir, Bava Kama, talking about my ox is goring your sheep, or something like that. And you happen to want to know something in Hilchas Shabbos, so it wouldn't be appropriate to interrupt whatever the Rebbe would be teaching to ask whatever shaila the student has. The exception to that is 30 days before Yom Tov, if the Rebbe would be teaching, let's say, Bava Kama with the axe goring some other sheep or some other damages, and the student wants to ask a question in Hilchos Pesach, the student could ask that question without having to apologize beforehand, and the Rebbe is obligated to respond to the student in the question of that is within the holiday of 30 days hence. So that's really what the halacha means. Nevertheless, it also means in general you're supposed to start dwelling on the halachas of the Yom Tov 30 days before. So we will, especially since we finished what we did last time and we took care of Purim, now we're within the month of Pesach. And then normally, you know, if I was speaking to people who, you know, are making Pesach, I'd be scared to put fear in people's hearts so early. But most of us are not making Pesach independently, maybe a few exceptions. So therefore, I think it might be fitting to at least be familiar with what we're going to be doing when we're going to be looking for chametz at Bedikas Chametz. And maybe with what we learn in mind, we might be able to come out with a little bit more care about things that we should be more careful about. And perhaps we could focus less on things that people end up checking that you don't really have to. We will come out with some very significant kulas that might change the way you clean for Pesach and make life a little bit more easy. We're not going to be talking about medicines tonight. We're not going to be talking about shampoos, soaps, deodorants, and all that stuff. Basically, the minhag in our yeshiva is that we're makel, not to consider wheat germ, protein-filled volumizer, conditioners and shampoos and soaps and all the like. Anything that's not food, we in our yeshiva the minhag is. And again, there are other minhagim in Klal Yisrael, Rabbi Blumenkrantz is machmir about those kinds of things. But the minhag in our yeshiva, those who are affiliated with our yeshiva, is that everything that's completely not food in any which way, it's a soap, it's a deodorant, it's a shampoo, conditioner, some skin cream, we're not worried if there's a little bit of wheat germ or oat, whatever else they put oats in. I think they just do it for marketing reasons. I don't doubt that oats really... What? Okay, fine. Okay, I'm not gonna talk about that, which I'm not so familiar with. I guess I should stick to my... I'll stick to this, and you'll worry about the wheat germ or the shampoos. So we're not going to talk about that tonight, but just know that the minhag in our yeshiva is that one does not have to check if they are chametz or if there's wheat germ in their such materials, such toiletries. But we are going to talk about real breadcrumbs, pretzel crumbs. That's what I want to talk about. Where do we have to check? How particular do we have to be? I recently brought a couch to my apartment, so I had to take out the seats in the back of my minivan. So those of you who have minivans and have removable benches know that there's those sockets on the floor that magically suck. There's actually a marshmallow. I won't tell you what I did with it. But it was a little bit hard, but whatever. Such is life when you're moving couches. Do you have to take out the seats to vacuum those sockets where the bench is attached to your minivan? Or could you just leave your bench in the minivan and vacuum around it? Do you not have to vacuum anything at all? We'll talk about that. Crumbs inside a sandwich maker. Let's say you put the sandwich maker away, a panini grill or a toaster, you can put it away, but do you have to get rid of all those crumbs? Those of you have flour, we have a bread machine. So how, what do you have to do with your bread machine before Pesach? Those of you who have, anyone here have a laptop? I knew that. You didn't have to answer me. So chances are you eat breakfast, lunch, supper, and five other meals a day over your laptop, and there are crumbs that make their way under the keys and between the keys and in the creases. To what extent do you have to... Is there anyone here who uses their laptop on Pesach? Taking it too seriously. Yes, we all use our laptops on Pesach, not on Yantiv, on Chol Moed. And do we have to clean the laptop before we, if we want to use it on Pesach, especially since we eat seven meals a day on it? Your favorite book, or your Shnai Mikra, your Tehillim, your Siddur that you, again, eat with. And I used to have a special Sefer that I learned during breakfast. Shai Tshuva. I had a certain Shai Tshuva that one year, I think, when I was in Yeshiva, I used to eat breakfast at a desk with my Shai Tshuva propped up, eating my cereal or whatever else I was eating for breakfast. So that was bikvius, eaten with, learned with chametz. So do you have to... What are, what are you going to do about those svarim specifically and your laptops? So those are the issues that we want to talk about today. But we're going to begin by talking about something that's very fundamental in the Maseches Pesachim, in both the Mishnayos and the Gemara. And that is, well, before we do that, let's just think about chametz for a second. How many different ways do we have to rid ourselves of chametz? Go ahead, shoot.
Burning it.
Beer chametz? What? Mechiras chametz? Okay, that's just a different kind of beer. Eating it, that's also according to one opinion that might also be beer. Yeah, consuming it. Being mafkir it. Mafkir means declaring it ownerless. So that it's not, if the Torah says it can't be owned by a Jew, so it's not owned by a Jew. You forgot something. What? Throwing it out, that would be similar to mafkir, so that, yeah, that would be another one, yeah?
It's nullifying, that's
bittel, yes, bittel, that's what I was waiting for, bittel, okay. Which may or may not be just being mafkir. Mafkir is you're making it ownerless, bittel says you're just sort of declaring it, I hereby declare that this is nothing. How does that work? Not for now, but it could work for good reason, but not for now. So now which one of those, now owning chametz obviously is also mida, Araisa, of course. And which of that means if I want to get rid of this Issur D'Araisa of owning chametz, I have to use some D'Araisa mechanism to rid myself of the chametz. So of the five different mechanisms that we just mentioned, which one is D'Araisa? I'll ask the question again and the answer is going to be whatever you say, you're going to be wrong. The question is, if you can't own chametz mid'Araisa, and we just said there are five different ways to get rid of chametz, which one of those five is going to work on the D'Araisa level to make you not violate the Isra of Chametz? Wrong? Wrong. Okay, so the answer is, well, before we get to the answer, we'll see the answer in a few minutes. Let me tell you a story. The story goes like this. The story appears in Pesachim Mem Tes Amud Aleph. The story is like this. A fellow is walking to Yerushalayim to be makir korban Pesach or to do some other mitzvah like give his son a bris milah, which why would they give that example of somebody who didn't get a chance to check his house for chametz because he wants to go do give his son a bris milah? What? Why would that be chosen as the mitzvah that somebody is doing?
What?
Something more. Closer. The halacha is that an RL is not allowed to eat Korban Pesach. And it could be that if a person has an RL in his home, he's not allowed to eat a Korban Pesach. So somebody who has not gone to Bris Milah prevents the family from, if a person has an Eved even, if a person has an Eved, a slave who didn't get a Bris Milah, the owner can't eat Korban Pesach. So it is appropriate and reasonable that somebody who's on his way to bring a Korban Pesach has to be worried about, A, you know, he has to go to Yerushalayim to go bring the Korban Pesach, and B, has to make sure that everybody in his family had their bris milas, even if they're not 8 days old. Just make sure that the bris milas have been taken care of. You know, it's like a checklist. You're in Yerushalayim? Check. You have a sheep? Check. Does it have any mums? No? Check. Everyone in the family has a bris milah? Check. Okay, go bring your Korban Pesach. So goes down the checklist and everything is checked. And then he realizes that he left a whole closet full of Stella Dora cookies in his house. So ideally he should go home and he should destroy the Stella Dora cookies and then go bring his Korban Pesach. If he can't, then what does he do? Says the Mishnah in Psachim, Daf Mem Tes, he should just do Bittel B'Lev. That means he doesn't even have to say a word with his mouth. We always try to articulate the words with our mouths because it's safer that way. But in his heart, he just has to have in mind, let me try to do this, that you could all hear me. I really don't like chametz. I hate chametz. I want to get rid of my chametz. This chametz is meaningless to me. And when he thinks that, that exempts him from the issue of only chametz on Pesach. So, if we stop here, we have a question. If it's sufficient to get rid of the iser of owning chametz on Pesach, simply by what this Mishnah told us of bittel chametz, being mevatelet, declaring it null and void, and just saying, I don't want it, disassociating with it, and you could do that with your heart, in your mind, in other words, so why do we spend all this time cleaning for Pesach? If all I have to do is just think about the fact that I don't want to have anything to do with my chametz, I'm a vatel, I nullify my chametz, I declare it meaningless and like the dust of the earth, then that should be sufficient. Why do we all spend so much time, or our families spend time, cleaning for chametz? So here, here we have a... This question is asked by the commentaries on the Gemara Psachim. Tosfos on the first daf of Psachim asks this question: why is there any need to check for chametz if you could get rid of the ownership of your chametz simply by doing bitzel chametz, by nullifying it in your heart? And there are two main answers that are given. One reason why you have to do bedika even if you did bitzel is the following. Because what happens if, let's say, you're in your apartment or your house, and yes, you have a weakness for Stella Doro, so you have your Stella Doros in some cupboard. And what's going to happen if you, before Pesach, you are mevatel chametz, you did bitel chametz, and you declare this chametz, these Stella Doros, to be meaningless and like the dust of the earth, and like they're worthless, and you really don't care about Stella Doros anymore? Sounds like tshuva a little bit. And you're disassociating yourself with Stella Doro from Mr. Stella Doro. Mrs. or Mr.? Stella, is that a man's name or a woman's name? I thought it's a woman's name, but I thought it was Mr. Stella Dora. But I don't know. Maybe that's just my chauvinistic, I don't know. So, what might happen on Pesach in a moment of weakness? In a moment of weakness, you know, after, you know, a few nights of tasteless matzah and some more, too many, especially if you don't brach them, it's even worse. And you're just like dying for the Stella Doros, and you're going to just break out and eat your Stella Doro cookies, chas v'shalom. So therefore, what did Chazal suggest? Getting rid of it. It's not enough just to be mevatler in your hearts, to consider it meaningless and to consider it null and void. To do bitul b'lev, you have to destroy it, shelo yavo la'ochlo. So you shouldn't come to eat it. Now, if we don't think of it the way I described it, it might be a little bit more reasonable. If you think of it as, it's not like it's in your pantry, but like you just didn't check your house. So in all kinds of places, some drawers have it, and you never know where you find chametz in your house. And comes Pesach, and you put on your favorite spring sweater, which you haven't worn in, let's say, 8-9 months, and you put on your spring jacket or sweater or sweatshirt, and you stick your hands in the pocket. You know, there's sweatshirts that have the pocket right here. So you stick your hands in the pocket, and lo and behold, sometimes you find a $5 bill, and you smile to yourself, and other times you find a Stella Dora cookie. Then you really smile to yourself. It's even better than a marshmallow. So what might happen? A person might come, you know, just, it's not a matter of like a moment of weakness. It's just you don't realize, and all of a sudden you come across chametz, you might come to eat it. Why? Because you didn't do a bedika, you didn't check your pockets before Pesach. If you would have checked your pockets before Pesach, you would have ensured that there's nothing there. But if you didn't check your pockets before Pesach, you might, God forbid, Let me rephrase that. You might find the chametz. Finding the chametz might not be a problem because you already disassociated yourself from it. So you're not violating owning chametz. But what might happen, even though you're not violating owning chametz because you did a bittul on that chametz, you might nevertheless violate something even worse than owning it. Meaning, you might come to eat it, chas v'shalom. And that's why Chachamim said that even though you do bittul, you still have to do bedika to get rid of it so you don't come to eat it. Let's just now put it in perspective. What I really just said is that midoraisa, a person has to do bittul. Okay? Midoraisa, a person has to do bittul. Don't write this because I'm going to say the opposite in a minute. Midoraisa, a person has to do bittul. Midrabbanan, we're worried that even though you're mevatlet and you disassociated and you nullified it in your mind, since we're worried, shema, maybe, whenever you hear the word shema, maybe, less, that we're worried about, that's always a code word for a dirabbanan. We're worried you might come to eat it. They made an issa dirabbanan to, you know, they made a gzera dirabbanan. You have to also clean your house and check for chametz, do your bedikas chametz as well. Now, I have a very simple question. How come they didn't make a chiv of like bedikas nevela? Or nevela, bedikas trefa, or bedikas, I don't know. What else is not kosher? Correct. The reason why they only have bedikas chametz, if the whole concern is that you're going to come to eat it, so we should be, concerned you could come to eat a lot of things. The answer is we're only worried about those things that all year long you do eat, and you do partake of, and you do have, you know, you do eat, and then all of a sudden there's a week that you can't. You might just forget yourself. I'll tell you a funny story. It's not funny. It was Erev Pesach, and those of you who know Avenue J could sort of picture, you know, the train on 16th. Who knows Avenue J? It used to be the D, now it's the Q on 16th and J. Okay, so I was right 3 blocks from my house. I live on 19th, and this is, you have to pass the train on 16th to get to the famous part of Avenue J. And then 2 blocks past are all the kosher stores and all the supermarkets and all the... So I went to do some shopping in Erev Pesach, and right before the train, there used to be a little like a bodega, I guess, like a little mini mart. So I would always very often pass that, and they had these, it goes back a long time, these like 25-cent Drake cookies. I don't remember that. Am I too old for this? 4 cookies in a package. They had coconut, they had chocolate chip. I think that, and maybe like chocolate chip, and you get 4 cookies in a package for 25 cents. So it was just a bit like when you're in elementary school, 25 cents, 4 cookies, it's a deal. So I would just consistently pass by there. So one day, Erev Pesach, I'm doing whatever Pesach errands I have to do, maybe getting flowers for my mom. I don't remember what exactly I was doing. And I'm passing by the supermarket, and as I habitually do and always was accustomed to do, I just walked into that same supermarket and put down my quarter and took my Drake's cookies, and I don't remember if I did start eating them or I didn't start eating them, but all of a sudden I realized Baruch Hashem was Erev Pesach before Chatzos. It was only allowed to serve Durabanan at that time. So Erev Pesach after Chatzos, it already would be an Issa Doraisa to own Chametz, because only Chametz is not just Asr on Pesach, it's Asr from when? From when is it Asr? What? When is it Asr Doraisa to own Chametz? What? I'll give you a hint. It's a pasuk in Chumash. What does the pasuk say? One second. The pasuk is slipping my mind. I'm sorry, but right when you bring the, from the time that you're allowed to bring the korban Pesach, los tishchat alav chametz. Right, los tishchat alav. Don't do shchita on this korban Pesach. Alav chametz while you have chametz around. When is the earliest time that a person can bring the korban Pesach? At noon, halachic noon, or a little bit after halachic noon. So from that time, it's asr mide oraisa. A lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people think that owning chametz is asr just on Pesach itself. That's not correct. It's asr mide oraisa to own chametz from Erev Pesach, which is when the korban Pesach was brought, from noon on Erev Pesach. Because remember, from noon on Erev Pesach, they shechted the korban Pesach. And then they ate it at the Seder with their matzah and their maror. But it had to be shechted. It wasn't, Korban Pesach is a misnomer. Korban Pesach was not brought on Pesach. It was brought on Erev Pesach, the day before Pesach, so that they could eat it at the Seder that night with their matzah and their maror. So, my point is that if you do something habitually, you're accustomed to eating certain foods, like my Drake cookies from that little supermarket on the corner of 16th Street and Avenue J, right before the train. So, something that you're accustomed to, you might just forget about and get into your routine and come to eat Chas V'Shalom Chametz on Pesach. That's why specifically by Chametz and not by all the other foods that are not kosher, that's why specifically here did the Chachamim decide to make a Gzeira, the Rabbanan, even though you did Bittel Chametz and you got rid of the prohibition of owning Chametz on Pesach, we're still worried you might forget yourself because you're accustomed to eating Chametz all year long, and therefore we want you to do Bedika so you won't come to eat the Chametz. So what do we have? We have an Issa D'Raisa of owning Chametz, which you took care of by doing Bittel. You said, it's not mine, I don't want it, I'm not interested in this Chametz. That took care of the Issa D'Raisa of owning Chametz. There is still a Chiyuv D'Rabbanan for you to search out and destroy the Chametz so you don't come to eat it. Yes, that's the first stage, yes.
After Pesach, let's say you just, what's the status of owning Chametz? You still have to burn it, you have to get rid of it in some way, no?
You're asking, what happens if a person did not get rid of Chametz, did not do Bedika, but all he did was a bit of Chametz? So is that going to be considered Chametz Sh'arva Lach HaPesach? I'll tell you a great story. There's a fellow here in Wayu Smicha who, this is a Shaila Rabbi Maybrook, the rabbi who was the rabbi here before I became the rabbi here, had the following Shaila. There's a fellow here in Smicha who became engaged to a girl, a religious girl, who was of a conservative family. Very nice, wonderful in-laws. And the father-in-law, they kept kosher, I think. They kept the father-in-law's family, meaning his kala's family kept kosher, I believe. It's a conservative family. And his father-in-law had an extensive liquor collection. Extensive means like really extensive and expensive. Thousands of dollars worth of liquors. For whatever reason, this father-in-law, when his son-in-law was joining the family, said, I wanted to give you my entire liquor collection, which is worth thousands of dollars. So what did the fellow who's in Smicha realize? These are all kosher wines, all kosher liquors. What did he realize? That this was all chametz that was owned by a Jew because he was conservative, and the father-in-law was conservative and kept kosher, but he never did mechiras chametz. I don't know if he did bittel chametz either. So he owned the chametz on Pesach, probably for many Pesachs. So that means it was chametz, real chametz, owned by a Jew over Pesach. That chametz is all prohibited to get hana'ah from. It's chametz she'avar alav ha'pesach, which is aser midrabanan. Chacham said, we don't want to let you even get hana'ah, get benefit from this chametz, because we want to put some teeth into the iser of owning chametz to make sure that if you don't take care of it, you're not even going to be able to use it anymore. And the shaila that Rabbi Meirik was asked, which is not really a shaila, is there anything he could do about taking this gift from his father-in-law? The answer was no. It's Asur Bahana. So all those thousands of dollars of liquor and whiskey can't even be sold, I believe. I think it's not just Asur to eat. I think it's even Asur Bahana. Could that be? I don't remember.
I don't know. At the end of the day, it sounds like...
Well, the father-in-law, if he doesn't care, if he didn't care about it until now, he might not care about it from here on. So halachically, no one's allowed to eat it. And I think it might even be, I just slipped my mind, if it's Asur Bahana as well, if it's prohibited for the father-in-law even to sell it. That just slipped my mind, I'm not sure. Giving it away to somebody who will do a favor to you, like in return, would be also getting hana from it, probably. Feeding it to your dog? Sometimes I just wish I was a dog. Okay. There's another reason why specifically here, another reason why specifically here, by Chametz, Chachamim instituted this, even though you took care of the Issur D'Oraisa of owning Chametz by doing a Bittel, another reason why specifically by Chametz, Chachamim instituted a Takana D'Rabbanan to get rid of it. Besides that you might come to eat it because you're accustomed to accustomed to having it. Why else might you come? What over here by chametz might they be concerned that you might come to eat it? How else is chametz different than other prohibitions in the Torah that we don't say you have to do bedikas? We do bedikas talaim, but we don't do bedikas nevelas and trefas and all the other things that are also to eat. Chametz is unusual. Chametz is unique. Chametz is what? That's also true. It's kares. Chametz is more severe than other averes because it's kares, and also it's not only also to eat, but the fact that the Torah says, Hashem says, I don't even want you to own it, shows that there's something unique about chametz, something severe about chametz, and therefore Chazal saw that it's something that's really the Torah takes very seriously, and therefore we want to make sure you don't come to eat it. So there are two reasons why we want to make sure that even though you don't own it anymore, you're not going to violate Baal Yirah because you did a bittul, we still want to make sure you don't come to eat it. Either because it's, meaning why is chametz unique, different than other foods? Because A, chametz you eat all year long, like my story about the Drake's cookies in the corner supermarket, you forget it for a moment. And secondly, because chametz is so bad, it's even such to Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzi, it's such a bad thing. That's why Chacham said specifically by chametz, we make a gzera to clear it out of your house so you don't come to eat it.
Going back to this non-born, you're
not allowed to come to your house. Mm-hmm.
Is the fact that when you're not able to
do a permanent
now,
you're not allowed to do a permanent? No, that's not correct. For the Isser's man of owning chametz is still going to be Midoraisa from Erev Pesach at noon, at Chatzos, whatever Chatzos is. Now that we changed the clock, Chatzos will be around 1 o'clock, not 12 o'clock, even though we don't have a current Pesach nowadays. There is one other reason that is given by other Rishonim, by the Ran, the Rabbeinu Nisim, why Chachamim are not satisfied with the Bittul Chametz that we do with our minds. Or even our mouths. I just say, I hereby don't want my chametz, I disassociate from my chametz. So even if the Torah recognizes that as enough to not violate owning chametz, says the Ran, you know what's the problem when you leave things up to people's brains? What happens when you leave things up to people's brains? If I tell you, you have to do a mitzvah and it's going to be done only in your mind, what's the downside of that? Well, I don't know if you could change your mind once you sort of declared it disassociate. I don't think having in mind is gonna, you're gonna change your mind and become associated with it again. I don't know if that will work. What?
Forget.
You might forget to do it, but if you did it, then that should be, once you do your bittul chametz, you should not have to do bedikah anymore. Exactly. Says the Ran, you might not be serious about it. If you're, it's only something that you're doing in your mind, some people won't really be serious about what they're supposed to be really thinking, feeling, and therefore they won't really, like if you had a lot of Stelador, like if you have like half a bottle of macaroni and you know a few Cheerios, it's easy to do bittul with full kavana. If you have some good again Stelador, some Strimal cookies, a box or two, that's a little bit harder to so easily disassociate from, and that's what the Ran says. And it's not just that it's hard, but it's also that, let's say you have, for example, a wine cellar with thousands of dollars of liquor, as we just mentioned. So the guy is really serious when he's like, okay, I don't want to have this anymore. I'm just disassociating myself from it. I don't like all my chametz, and I'm just going to consider it worthless and meaningless. And so there could be one bottle there that's worth $300-$400. Do you think the guy's really going to be serious if he's... all we're going to make him do is this bittul belev, this mental disassociation from chametz? So, Chachamim were concerned that might, you might not be serious about it, you might not really mean it, and therefore, even if you say it with your mouth, you might not seriously mean it. Therefore, your bittul would not have worked. And what happens if your bittul would not have worked? Your nullification would not have worked, then you would be owning chametz on Pesach. That would be really bad. That would be asur daraisa. So what do Chachamim say? That even if it's enough, midaraisa, theoretically, for you to do bittul chametz, what do I want you to do also, say Chachamim? I also want you to destroy it and get it out of your house. So that we don't have to be worried about maybe somebody not being serious about his or her bittul chametz. So those are the two general reasons why, even if you did a bit of chametz, a nullification of the chametz with your mind and your mouth, you still have to get rid of it physically. You have to do a bedika, either, as we said before, because you don't want to come to eat it. And what we're saying now from the Ran, that we're worried that your bittel belev, your emotional, or even your verbal articulation of that bittel might not have been serious. Those are the two reasons why bittel is not sufficient. Yeah. Great question. You know who asked that question? Me in the next line. In my holy words. What if you did do bedika beer? Is there any need for bittel? Right? So I was mechaven to Michal. And Michal, I have good news for you. It's not just me who you were mechaven to. The Gemara asks your question. Gemara in Pesachim Daf Vav. Gemara says that, basically, what's Michal's question? Michal's question is, we just said that it's so much better to get rid of it. Because if you just do bittel, maybe you aren't serious about it. If you just do bittel with your mind, maybe you'll come to eat it. So you have a much better solution. Just don't do bittel and just get rid of it. If you get rid of it, so you're not going to come to eat it because there's nothing to get rid of. There's nothing to eat, I mean, you got rid of it. And if you got rid of it, then there's nothing that you will not be serious about. It's gone. You pour all those liquors straight down the drain. So why do you need to do bittel at all? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara says, "Habodek tzarech shiyevatel." Three famous words. Even if you do bedika, even if you got rid of all your chametz, nevertheless, tzarech shiyevatel, you still need to do bittel. What could be the problem? You got rid of the chametz. You got rid of the chametz. Why should you need a bittel? The Gemara says, "Well, maybe." And this is going to be a very important line for later. Maybe because when you cleaned your house, you didn't find some of the crumbs. So if all we're relying on is your cleaning, and you didn't clean all the crumbs, so that means you're going to violate chametz on owning those crumbs, right? Well, says the Gemara, thankfully, nah. Crumbs are batel. By definition, crumbs are too insignificant to make you violate only chametz. They're just little crumbs. They're meaningless, and therefore you're not gonna. There's no problem of owning chametz if it's just crumbs. That's gonna be important for us because we just found out, sort of by the way, that owning crumbs is not a problem of owning chametz on Pesach. So what could be the so it can't be the crumbs that we're worried about. So what's the problem of if I did a bedika? Why do I also have to do a bittel? Says the Gemara. We're worried, Shema Yimtza Gluska Yafa. Maybe you will find a nice piece of cake. I will tell you another story. I was cleaning my brother's car for Pesach because he went to Israel for the year. And he was nice enough, he went to Israel for the year. So he was nice enough to let me have his car for the year, which was nice until Erev Pesach. Because Erev Pesach, I had to clean out his car. Now, my brother, I have a few brothers, so just because it's on tape, no one knows which brother it is. I have a certain brother who likes snacking, and like really likes snacking. So I start cleaning out his car, and it's like never ending. You stick your hand into the console. Between the driver and the passenger seat, there's a console that things, that like latches that open up, and you could put little things there. And there's just, it's like a never-ending flow of like, you know, they're like a whole, like, you know, ice cream cones with the ice cream still there. It's like, it's just incredible what's in there. And as I'm doing this, there's some really good quality chametz that's coming out. So let's say I would have done a bedika and I would have forgotten to get that console between the driver's seat and the passenger seat. So what would have happened? I did a bedika. What would happen on Pesach? I would go, you know, I'm going, driving to my Pesach Chol Moed trip, and I want to take out a good CD. I go out to that console, take out the CD, lo and behold, what comes out? You know, a babka or something. So, you never know. So, you take out this babka. Now, what's going to go through my mind when I see this babka on Chol Moed Pesach? Gevaldige babka. I haven't had babka in a week. I love babka. So, in that split second that in my mind I said, wow, I love babka, And I didn't immediately rush to destroy it. What did I just violate? The Issa Daraisa of owning chametz. Meaning, even though I owned chametz the whole time, but since I got rid of everything that I could, I sort of held in abeyance, pushed off the Issa of owning chametz. But if there is a split moment when I do find chametz, that will be there. If you don't check and search, then you're going to find chametz. And you're going to say, hey, I like that. That moment you'll violate the Issa of owning chametz. How do you prevent that from happening? By doing bittul. Why? What does bittul help? Because bittul does not relate to a specific or a particular piece of chametz here or there as bedika does. Bedika means you get rid of the chametz. You get rid of this and you get rid of this and you get rid of this and you clean this and you clean this and then you clean that. But bittul is just a statement that you utter and you say, I hereby declare all my chametz, kol chamira v'chamia, de'ika b'rishusi, all the chametz that is in my rishus. I hereby declare ownerless, meaningless, null and void, like the dust of the earth. And that one, those words from my mouth work on all the chametz, anywhere in my possession, in my house, in my car, in my workplace. So therefore, that one utterance covers any little bit of chametz that might ever come up. And therefore, I'm disassociated with that babka from before Pesach starting. And even if I find it on Pesach, whose chametz did I find? Whose babka did I find? Not mine, not my brother's, Mr. Hefker's, Mr. It's not even, maybe it's not even halachically considered babka. Maybe it's considered just dirt once I did bittul. So therefore, let me sum that up in one line. The question was, if bedika is so much better, because bedika makes sure there's nothing to eat, bedika makes sure that you're serious because you got rid of it, so why do you have to do a bittul? The answer is, if you just did a bedika, you might have missed something. And therefore, when you find it on Pesach, if you would find it on Pesach, you would violate only chametz right when you found it. So therefore, you could preempt that by doing a bittul ahead of time. Yes, Micha.
So, let's say you do bittul, so it's not yours anymore. Let's say after the fact you found a cookie, an edible cookie, you can eat it afterwards.
Yes, if you did bittul before Pesach, and then after Pesach you found something that you just missed over the whole yantif, that's totally fine. You could eat that. Yes. Because if it's chametz that you know about, that you're going to be in the presence of, we're concerned you might come to eat it. I'll give you a very important application of what you just said. Let's say you're going to be in, I don't know, Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. I think you were last year, if I remember correctly. Okay, well, a few years ago, I remember you telling me you're in Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. So you're not going to be in your apartment at all. So, are we worried that you're going to come to eat the chametz in your apartment if you're 6,000 miles away? So, what do we not have to be worried about? Shema Yocha, you might come to eat it. So, in that case, you could get around cleaning for Pesach. You could just do bittul and not be worried about doing a bedika there. It's a little more complicated than what I just said, but theoretically, yeah. Right, you're saying by definition, if you're taking some stuff that you don't... right, that by definition, if you're putting it away because you want to use it later, then the bittul won't be serious. That's also true. Right.
So that's why you sell it.
Right, but if you do mechira, then you could preempt... That is what we do, in a sense. We do take whatever we want and put it in a pantry and we do mechira. And the tape is what prevents us from that concern, that shem yochal. That's a good point, yeah.
Everything we're saying about chametz also apply to Ashkenazi for kidney? Let's say I find a bag of rice in my house. I'm Ashkenazi. Would I have to immediately sell it or throw it out?
Excellent question. So first of all, let's talk about chametz. If you find chametz on Pesach, you can't sell it because it becomes aser b'hana, and therefore you're not allowed to get any benefit from it. If it would be like a cake or a cookie, you wouldn't be able to sell it. You wouldn't be able to feed it to your dog. Because that's saving you the lunch that you would otherwise have to feed your dog. So that's a hana that you're deriving. But no, that's only for chametz. If it would be a bag of rice or a bag of beans, kidneys, that's not... You could keep bags of rice in your house on Pesach. You could keep bags of kidneys in your house on Pesach. You don't have to put it with the stuff that you're selling. You're just not allowed to eat it. I'm allowed to eat it.
Isn't it almost impossible to eat? Because you're looking around and checking. You're saying that anything
You're asking, is the action of bedikas chametz, if you're searching to destroy something, does that mean that you're not really interested in it?
Yeah, and anything else that you don't find, clearly it's not on your mind to begin with, and you don't have the idea. Almost like the idea of oneself.
Yeah, you're suggesting that every time you do a bedika, that should be an implicit, silent, automatic bittul also. So I've been sort of avoiding the question of what actually bittul is. Let's assume for a moment that bittul is works through the mechanism. This is machlokas, which one it is. But let's assume for a moment it's like those who hold that bittul is hefker. When I say I don't like chametz, I'm hereby mevatel my chametz, I'm being mafkirit, making it ownerless. You can't make something ownerless by showing that you don't like it. If you buy me a tie for my birthday and I really don't like it and I put it in the back of my closet, that doesn't mean somebody could come and take it. My tie, I just don't like it, I'm never going to wear it, but it's still mine. So if I say that this chametz that I have is terrible and worthless and I don't consider, I want to destroy it, I want to burn it, I'm looking for all of my house so I could destroy it, that doesn't mean that I don't own it. I still own it. If I destroyed it, I destroy it. If I don't destroy it, then... You're right. It makes more sense according to the other side in the Rishonim who assume that bittul is just sort of disassociating from it. You could be mafkir something in your house. Yeah, no, you could be mafkir something in your house. But again, I don't want to get into bittul. That's just fine points of how bittul works. Okay. So now that we got to a very important point, we just did something funny. We started off saying that if you just do a if you just do bittul chametz, you run into problems. What are the problems you run into if you just do bittul? You might come to eat it, shem yochal. And secondly, if you just did bittul, what's the other problem if you just did bittul? You might not have been serious. Okay, so that's why you also have to do bedika. And on the other side of the coin, let's say you just did bedika and you didn't do bittul. If you just did bedika, what's going to be the problem? You might have missed something. So you have to do both. You remember I asked you 25 minutes ago, which one is daraisa? And I told you whatever you say is going to be wrong. It works like this. We own chametz. The goal is to not own chametz. You could do that in lots of different ways. The first one you do is the one that worked midaraisa. If you did bittul first, then bittul was daraisa, and then midarabanan, we're going to want you to clean out the chametz so you don't come to eat it, so you to ensure that you were serious about the bittul. The first one you did was bedika, the bedika was daraisa. I don't remember what I just said. Let's say again, the first thing you did was bedika, then that was daraisa, and we still want you to do a bittul in case your bedika was not so perfect. Or inversely, let's say conversely, if the bittul you did first, so the bittul ended up being the daraisa fulfillment of not owning chametz. And the bedika that follows, that will be necessarily only midrabanan to make sure that you cover your bases, you won't come to eat it, and you're serious about your bittul. So therefore, the answer is, which one is daraisa? Whatever you do first. And the second one will be drabanan. Which one? Bittul or bedika? Do you have to clean or do you just have to say you don't want it? It really doesn't matter which order you do it in. But you're going to have to do both. The first one worked midaraisa to pat to you to exempt you from owning chametz. The second one was required midrabanan. Doesn't really matter which one you did. Okay. Let us go to the next step before, so that we could get to some very important kulas regarding cleaning for chametz. In general, when the Torah says, I want you to eat matzah, I want you to eat Korban Pesach, I don't want you to eat nevela, I don't want you to eat trefa, I don't want you to eat all the other foods that we're not allowed to eat, how much do I have to either yes eat when it's a mitzvah to eat, or not eat when it's a mitzvah to not eat? What's the shiur? Almost always it's a kezias. Well, here we have something a little bit funny, because here the Torah doesn't just tell me don't eat chametz, it also says, lo yirav, lo yimatzei, don't own chametz. So how much is that going to be? How much chametz am I not allowed to own midaraisa? A crumb? Okay, Zayas. You're the same age, just means they're not small enough that you can't see. I hear that. I think you must see your value right should not be seen. Yeah, okay, you're saying most literally can't say that you can't see. The answer is to violate, and this is going to be a little bit tricky, to get malchus on owning chametz, on buying chametz on Pesach, it's a kazayas. But I think we might have mentioned the concept once before, over the past year or two, the concept of chatzi shir. We've mentioned chatzi shir, that if you do less than the amount that the Torah says, don't eat, it doesn't just mean like let's say you're not allowed to eat pig, right? So does that mean I could have a half a kazayas of pig? Bacon bits, they're not in anymore, but there used to be bacon bits, like you would shake them on your salad and feel like really great. So we used to do that. When I, you know, it was like a cheap thrill from people. So if you just put enough bacon bits, it's like 2/3 of a kazayas. Real bacon, not bacon bits, like the real bacon. You crumble some bacon, 2/3 of a kazayas onto your salad. So is that going to be like, that's totally mutter? It's a little bit of chatzi shir of milk and meat is also, you know, not pasu b'chalav. If you can't eat pasu b'chalav, it's just a kazayas. So I could put a little bit, you know, have a little bit of, you know, a small bite of a cheeseburger. That's okay. Less than a kazayas. Every 10 minutes, another one. Like some people do this on Yom Kippur. I just go with my friends to McDonald's and I take one bite every, you know. So obviously that's not okay. And the question is it not okay midaraisa, midarabanan? We pass that it's not okay midaraisa. Even though there's an issur daraisa to have a shear of eating certain things and owning chametz, that would be a kazayas, but there's an issur midaraisa of chatzi shear. It's just I don't get punished for it. I'm not going to get lashes, I won't get my malchus, but it is still aser midaraisa, chatzi shir aser min haTorah. Now, the question is, does that apply also to owning chametz? You see, that which we know clearly, the chatzi shir is aser daraisa, maybe it only applies to food items that I'm going to eat. I'm not allowed to have a small bite of a McDonald's burger. I'm not allowed to have a small bite of a Skittles are kosher or not? Okay, these do not be. So before they became, I'm not allowed to have, you know, a small bite of something not kosher. Clearly, also daraisa. But what about owning chametz? Owning chametz is not eating. So am I allowed to have a chatzi shir if we assume that the shir for Bal Yira and Bal Yimach say not owning chametz is a kazayas? So am I allowed to own less than a kazayas? Now that's very significant because a lot of what we check for when we check our houses are for small pieces like Cheerios and small pieces of chametz that are less than a kazayas. Do I have to be worried about this? Is there bayira bayimatze on less than a kazayas? That's going to be a gigantic question. And the answer, unfortunately, is that's a big machlokes. So that's at least one step. Do you have to make sure that you don't own small amounts of chametz, less than a kazayas? The answer is, it's machlokas. Some say, since it's less than a kazayas, it's only chatzi shir. Chatzi shir is only usher by food. This is not food, this is owning chametz. Others say, no, just like by food we have chatzi shir, owning half a shir is usher daraisa, so too, owning the chametz is going to be usher daraisa. That's going to be a big machlokas. But, if we assume that there's no issur, there's no prohibition of owning half a kazayas, let's say, a little bit of chametz. So does that mean that I'm just allowed to check my house for large clumps of chametz? I don't really have to ever sweep. Let's say I have a dresser that's low enough to the ground that you can't fit a kazayas under it. I don't have to sweep under it. I don't have to check under it. I don't have to run my fingers under it. Let's say you have, you know, near the foot of your table in your dining room. You don't have to sweep or clean up there. You don't have to wipe off the bottoms of your chairs because there's no kazayas of chametz there. Is that going to be true or not? That's what we'll try to talk about now. Yeah. You're asking a very good question. You're asking whether we consider liquors, whiskeys, scotches, vodkas, all the things that are made out of beers, that are made with chametz, do we consider them to be what halacha calls as taroves chametz or chametz mamish? Is it like, it's like sort of chicken soup just spiked? Or is it, no, it's a piece of chametz just in liquid form? You hear the difference? Is that clear? I think so, okay. The halacha does see it as like a pure piece of bread just in liquid form. It matters a little bit, but you could assume that any whiskey or vodka we consider chametz mamish, not taruvas chametz. It's not like, you know, you get some food items like, let's say there would be some kind of ketchup that has some little bit of grain in it. So that would not be what we call chametz mamish. That would be called taruvas chametz. It's really ketchup, tomatoes, and spices, and a little bit of chametz at the end for some flavoring. That would be less chamer. That would be only taruves, a mixture of chametz. It's not going to go into that. So here, let us really get to what's a okay. We have a few minutes to finish off with a very, very, very important leniency. But before we talk about leniency, let's talk about a chumrah. It's not a chumrah, it's just something that a lot of people don't realize. We mentioned a minute ago that maybe there won't be chatzi shir, there won't be a problem owning a little bit of chametz, if it's less than the shir of violating chametz, which is a kezias. But if you remember, one of the concerns, one of the reasons why we suggest that you need to have a bedika, is that what happens if you have chametz that you don't violate because you did a bitalon? You might, if you own it, you might come to. Well, if you own it, you might come to eat it. So, wait, eating is subject to chatzi shir. So maybe we should say the following. Even though owning it is not essentially a problem, if it's less than a shir, if it's less than a kezias, but if you have less than a kezias, you might come to eat less than a kezias, and that will be asur min ha-Torah. So therefore, even if a person does have only smaller pieces than a kezias in their house, things that are less than a kezias, they do have to clear their house of it, because even though owning it might not be a problem independently, inherently, it would be at least a gzera d'rabbanan that they might come, if they would find, they might come to eat it. And therefore, ladies and gentlemen, if you have clothing that you ever put food in, and one of my kids, how'd it go? I don't remember. Peanut butter. Yeah. I think they took peanut butter and they just put it in their pocket. Trying to remember who it was. I don't remember. I think that they had like some crackers and they were sort of dipping them in their pocket to have some peanut butter on their crackers. I don't remember the details. I have to ask my wife next time I bump into it. I think one of the kids did that. So certainly if there are children in the house, but even if there are no children in the house, sometimes you put a little, you know, you let's say you went to a bris and there was some, you know, it's a mitzvah to eat food from bris. Even if you don't have time to stay, you're still supposed to take some food with you. So you take a rugel, a cookie from the bris, you wrap it in a napkin and you stick it in your pocket. So if you're such a person, or sometimes you have some candies that you stick in your pockets, or throat lozenges, I don't know if they're helmets. But because we just said that we are concerned with even less than a kezias of chametz, even if it's not a violation of bayra bayimasa because it's less than a kezias, but you might come to eat it, so you have to get rid of, you have to therefore check all the pockets of any clothing that you're going to be wearing on Pesach. Even if it's not clean, what if you're not wearing it on Pesach? Slips my mind. But certainly anything that you're going to be wearing on Pesach, shirts, sweatshirts, jackets especially, skirts that have pockets, kids' pants, you know, pants definitely, All those things do have to be checked when you do your bidikas chametz or preparation for your bidikas chametz. Those are, that's not a chumrah, that is required medina to check the pockets of your clothing. Because we are worried that there will be chametz, even if it is less than a kazayas, even if there's small pockets or tight pockets that couldn't hold a bulging kazayas, not so big, still we would be concerned because we are worried, even if it's less than a kazayas, that you might, you know, forget oneself and come to eat it. So therefore, it'll be usher to have that even less than a kazayas. Now, I mentioned before, the Gemara said that we're not really worried about crumbs. Remember when we mentioned crumbs before? We said, the Gemara said, oh, we're not really worried about crumbs because crumbs are just sort of, you know, automatically nullified. They're automatically meaningless. The Gemara had a line like that. That is true. The Gemara said that crumbs are meaningless. But there's a long discussion, which we're not going to go into, that is concerned with chametz in a kli. Let me give you an example. In the olden days, you used to, I mean, picture a rolling pin. After you roll out cookies, who made hamantaschen for? So we made hamantaschen. They were very tasty again. Thank you. So you made hamantaschen for Purim. And now you have that pan where you rolled it on, or that paper. And now we have disposable paper that you, parchment paper that you roll it on. But you have the rolling pin. Now your rolling pin, after you roll hamantaschen on it, has bits of chametz on it that's stuck to it. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about chametz that's on a rolling pin, chametz that's on a, that's stuck to a kli, and the Shulchan Aruch says that we are concerned that the chametz that's on your, the little bits of chametz that are on your rolling pin, you do have to get rid of that. Now that's something that's less than a kazayas. And the Shulchan Aruch still says you have to be worried about these little bits of chametz that's on your rolling pin. Similarly, the Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you remember the years that Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos. Everybody talks about how you can eat Shalosh Shittos. Everyone likes talking about that. So, this year, really, Seder Matzei Shabbos, Friday night. Okay, fine. So if it would be not like this year, so let's say you eat your challah on your tablecloth, what do you do with the crumbs? So the Shulchan Aruch says, hey, wait a second, they're crumbs, aren't they? What's the problem? What do you have to do? There's nothing you have to do with it. They're crumbs, should be fine. Just don't eat on it, so you don't eat crumbs on Pesach, but you don't have to get rid of it. Nevertheless, the Shulchan Aruch says clearly in such a case, you have to shake out the crumbs onto the ground to sort of destroy those crumbs. So we see from numerous sources that we are concerned with crumbs. So we're sort of in a bind. On one hand, the Gemara said we're not worried if they're just crumbs. On the other hand, we seem to be saying that there is a concern for the bits of dough on the rolling pin, and we are concerned with the crumbs that are on the tablecloths. How do we figure out what to do regarding crumbs? So I want to leave you with a tremendous, tremendous kula, and this is Halacha Lemaisa in the next minute and 9 seconds. And it's as follows. There's a gigantic machlokas that I mentioned about 10 minutes ago, whether or not chatzi kazayas, less than a kazayas, you can't own or not. It's machlokas. So we do get rid of it. Now, let's say I have chametz that's less than a kazayas, that's also not really so edible. I don't mean that it's completely destroyed and even a dog wouldn't eat it. I mean it's dirty food. What's an example of that? Listen carefully. Crumbs that are on the floor. Crumbs that are on the floor. Two things. Crumbs that are on the floor have a double whammy. In Aramaic, it's called tartil reyusa. A double whammy. Two to the bad. A double bad. They're A, crumbs that are less than a kazayas, and B, they're dirtied because they're on the floor where people walk. Those, a person is not obligated to get rid of for Pesach. So therefore, any crumbs that are less than a kazayas that are on the floor is not subject to Bayra, Bayamatze. You do not have to clean your house from crumbs that are on the floor. If it would be on your rolling pin, that's only one whammy. It's less than a kazayas, but they're not dirtied. They're not stampled. In the couch, maybe, assuming that the crumbs in our couch are small, but they are not dirtied, then you would have to clean the crumbs from your couch. If once they hit the floor, though, we assume that they're trampled and stepped on, those crumbs, one does not have to clean up. This is how the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, the Mishnah Berurah Paskins, I mean, and therefore, again, since there's a machlokas, whether or not less than a kazayas is a problem at all, so we're machmir if it's less than a kazayas. However, if it's dirty, a little bit dirty, and it's less than a kazayas, then a person does not have to clean them. So therefore, if you have crumbs, a little bit of crumbs in a vacuum bag, assuming that it's less than a kazayas in a vacuum bag, they're definitely dirty. You don't have to empty your vacuum before Pesach. If you have crumbs anywhere on the floor, you don't have to be worried. You can just watch them, look at them, smile at them, and wish them a Chag Kashrus Sameach. Yeah?
What if you know the crumbs are
really
bad, so they're still not?
That they're really old?
They're like old.
Oh, you're saying the crumbs in my couch are from when my niece was here, you know, for my little niece was here, and she crumbled that Humintosh a month ago. I don't know if that's going to be enough to make it dirty. I don't know. I don't know the answer. Yeah. Yeah, that great idea. Everybody should put their feet on their couch, and that will exempt you. But you have to stick your toes into that, you know, between the pillows. Stick your toes in so that those crumbs are, you know, really, yeah. Correct. Anything that you know is grimy and dirty is going to be, if it's less than kazayas and that location is a dirty place, then you do not have to worry. So therefore, by the way, did you ever try to clean your car and you always worry about those crumbs that are in the carpet?
Or in the cold.
That's the floor. They're less than a kazayas. You don't have to be worried about it. Now, it could be if there's a kazayas between all of them, and I assure you, if you add up all the Cheerios in your that are crushed onto the carpet of the car, sometimes, depends on the family, that could be a problem. But if there's not going to be a kazayas between all the area in the car, and it's all on, you know, stepped on the carpet of the car, that does not have to be cleaned for Pesach. So I'll stop with this, and I wish you a wonderful Pesach. Hopefully next week we'll have some other Pesach topic.